Okay, we're going to take your phone calls now this entire hour, so get ready on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. If an announcement is ever made, Gordon, to the masses about Planet X or anything, how do you think it'll be done?
Oh, that's already in the works. About 15 years ago, I realized there was a change coming over the way these disputes were going on in the world, and it was very inefficient to have people killing each other. So it seemed to me that there was some sort of a new corporate model coming in where it was much better to have somebody be your customer.
That's a good point. It's always good to do that.
Okay, so rather than kill them, why not just make them need what you have and
that's
pay for
true.
It?
Exactly.
Okay, so what we had recently, and this again is from Nancy at Zeta Talk, and the most incredible body of information I've ever seen in my life. Go read it yourself. Just thousands of pages, and updated every week. So, and I've asked them questions myself and gotten great answers. So anybody can ask a question. But she said that the puppet master—that's her phrase for the Rothschilds. And as you know, they probably own the world if anybody does.
They probably do.
And they don't care about, and now this is what I'm saying. She didn't say this, but I'm saying they don't care about extraterrestrials because they don't know about it. And they don't care about dimensional shift to a higher consciousness because they don't know about that either. But they do know that the only way they're going to ever stay in power, if there's no economy and there's no government, how in the hell are they going to stay in control or have any influence at all and benefit in any way? The only way is to have survival communities. And evidently, whoever the top Rothschilds are just met with Rupert Murdoch, and he agreed to start emphasizing that people should learn to save seeds and grow their own food and learn how to do things for themselves, and that they should think about survival communities. And guess who, of all the people on Fox News, is going to be bringing this out?
Who?
Glenn Beck.
Really? I know Glenn. I'll call him and ask him.
Yeah, and I don't know if he'll say that, but he's been shifting. If you notice, his commercials and his discussions are...
He's becoming more proactive when it comes to world events.
Yep, and so that's the plan, you see, and that's what everybody has to think about. If my family isn't going to go with me, if my children aren't going to go with me, if nobody at work believes me, where does that leave me? Because I know in my heart this is what's happening. What am I going to do about it? You've got to find other like-minded people, and you do not want to be in a city. You do not want to be on the coastline. You want to be as highly elevated as you can be away from the coast. And then you want to find like-minded people. And the real thing is that the extraterrestrials have promised that if you're in an unselfish community, in other words, the people that run it are not selfish at all. And this is going to be life or death. You cannot have a selfish person come in and eat a week's worth of food for 10 people.
No, you can't. We've got a whole bunch of calls here for you, Gordon.
So okay, I'm glad, and I'll look forward to it.
Let's go east of the Rockies. Robert from Asheville, North Carolina, home of Joshua P. Warren. Go ahead, Robert. How are you?
How are you, Gordon and George? I grew up in Virginia Beach, and Hela and Casey was a teacher for me for years at the Presbyterian Church.
Okay.
And, you know, at an early age, I went to the ARE, and like yourself, reading the black books, you know. It's a funny thing, you know, how much... do you remember of those black books?
What do you mean by black books? The readings?
Yeah, well, his readings.
Yeah, well, he said Virginia Beach would be a safety land, and I don't think that's true. I think it's actually going to be underwater. There's a map. It's called Hey, What's That? That's actually the name of it, and it's an add-on for Google Maps. So you do a search for Google Maps plus Hey, What's That? And you will get a sea level calculator, and you enter 675 feet for the final sea level 2 years after the pole shift, or enter 600 feet for the pole shift, and you'll see that all of Virginia Beach, right up into the Blue Ridge Mountains, is all underwater.
Absolutely. And, you went up to University of Virginia, and I'm sure you know, when you're a seeker of the truth, things, people come to you, and it's fascinating because I know Walter and Leo Russell. I'm sure you went to their castle over there.
No, I didn't know any of the people that own castles. Sorry.
Well, you know, I'm sure George knows them. But anyway, you know, also, it's like the Fabor Institute, Monroe Institute. You meet those people along the way, and it's so fascinating. I'm two stories underground right now. I moved to Asheville, and I built the Cliff House by myself.
Oh, that's great.
And so what I'm, what you know, each of us have our visions, and
right.
I really am a kindred soul to you, and I think what you're doing now is fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks,
thank
Robert.
You. I'm so glad you called. That was a nice question.
Next up, we go to El Cajon, California, west of the Rockies. Ruth's with us on Coast to Coast. Hey, Ruth, how are you?
Good.
Oh, you still there?
Oh, I think Ruth? We lost her.
Poor Ruth. There. Oh, well, she's gone. Let's go to Carrie in Utah. Ruth, try to get through. Go ahead, Carrie.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Hey, George, first-time caller, long-time listener.
Thank
Gordon, you.
You
are talking about something that I have dreamt about and experienced for a long time now. I put my hopes and feelings out to the universe to get some feeling better, get some input back, and I ended up doing it in Salt Lake. Well, I lived in Salt Lake for a while, and
that's the way to do it.
I'd come out and I'd say hi, and I'd get flashes in the sky back to me of all over, and I knew that these were aliens or whatever, you know, communicating. And I mean, this was, it didn't matter if it was cloudy, rainy, whatever, they would come through the clouds. I'd get a spotlight or whatever. But I had a conversation one night when I was roofing my house with a being that was floating by and actually signaled to me where she was at or he was at. They actually didn't know whether they were female or male. They didn't understand my question when I asked. But they were telling me that they didn't actually know when, because I asked the same question, like, you know, when did they think we were going to be, I don't know, taken over, have contact, or, you know, ask all these questions. And she literally seemed like she didn't know. And finally, at the end of it, she told me that they have a mothership that they go to they go to a portal station and they transfer off to almost like a mothership because their planet had been ravaged by war and greed and almost the exact same thing that we're going through right now. And she told me that they are not allowed to come to the planet. They are watch people. Like that. Have you had the same kind of experience?
Well, what I want to tell you is you've raised some very good points. First of all, anyone can contact ETs, but there's a rule. You have to ask them first. They cannot just, like, pop into your life. And you see, you sought them out, so that was the okay. And you being unselfish would meet unselfish ETs. If you're selfish and you make the call, you're going to meet people who lie to you and deceive you and fool you and trick you and try to scare you and frighten you. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that, you know, I know a lot of psychics and things, and I say, well, you know, you're giving a reading to somebody that their grandfather says they're fine in heaven. I said, why don't you give this message that everybody's about to have pole shift? And they said, well, they just don't want to be the ones to be telling that. And that's why, if there's any one reason, because I've had contact with the Pleiadians, my wife's had contact with the Zetas, but if there's one reason why I like the Zetas so much, it's because they're like I am. They'll tell you the way it is. They're not being blunt, they're being real. And I think a lot of alien groups, and even possibly, you know, the Pleiadians are much more social. And if you read Emily Post's etiquette book, you'll see that you should never say anything negative. And I think there's actually groups out there that that just don't want to be the ones that bring the bad news. And look, you know, if you get three people in a room, you're going to get different views on every single thing. It doesn't matter what you're. So why not? You know, why not have some groups that don't believe they should be the ones? Then you have individuals that may not even be interested in it. Why would they care about that? They've got other issues to deal with. That's your problem. This is our schoolhouse. We have to deal with it. But I'm very impressed what you did. And what you did is something anyone can do. And I was with a couple, and I was saying, you know, every single night all of us get contacted by ETs, but only people like me who have no job to lose, no family to turn against me, can talk about it, because other people are going to lose their job or they're going to be ridiculed. I mean, I've been through that abuse, so it's real. And I'm sure, you know, Nancy Leader talks about it quite a bit, that, you know, if you come out and start talking about this in years gone by, but every single year it's gotten better. And I said, you know, you go up every night for classes. And her five-year-old daughter said, Mommy, that's what happened to us last night. My sister and you and me, we all went up and we were in a classroom.
Is there a mothership up there, Gordon, that the smaller craft come down from?
Definitely. These smaller craft are not intergalactic or they're, you know, within a solar system. But, you know, people speculate over the purpose of HARP. And the purpose of HARP, believe it or not, was a new type of radar that would paint the motherships.
Paint the motherships? Tell me.
The way a radar paints a plane.
Uh-huh.
For detection.
Right.
Only it was an immense, that's why they just, I forget how many billion watts they just put in up there. They put in a new generator and they were painting these motherships, and they had to move further away because it was affecting the people on the ships and the ships themselves.
Interesting.
Well, whatever else HARP can do, and I'm sure there's a lot it can do, and probably most of it not so good, but whatever else it could do, the reason was to detect these motherships.
Matthew from Louisiana wants to know if people of different ethnicities have been abducted.
Oh, definitely.
Sure.
There's absolutely, and not only that, but the Zetas talk about how there's so many extraterrestrials here. They've all had a big meeting and they divided up parts of the Earth so that they didn't duplicate their efforts. And the Zetas took the United States and the Pleiadians took Europe. That's the only two that I know of. But the whole world has been divided up that way.
Let's go to Bruce in Atlanta, Georgia. There you go, Bruce. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, good evening, George. I wanted to ask the guest earlier at the end of the last segment, he mentioned something about the last time government and aliens had contact. It didn't work out so well. I was wondering if he could clarify as to possibly what government and what time frame or timeline he was referring to. And also, is Planet X a star similar to our sun, or is it an actual inhabited planet?
No, it is. In answer to the second part first, it is an inhabited planet, and they're selfish extraterrestrials, and they're allowed to mine gold on Mars now, but they're not allowed to come here and do that here. And a lot of people say it's a dwarf star, but even NASA, when they're talking about the subject, they go Planet X. They don't say Star X.
Okay. And
all
also,
right.
You mentioned, am I still on?
Yes.
Oh, also what I mentioned, the first part was...
Oh, yes. Eisenhower administration was the first time that there was open contact, and it was with unselfish aliens. And that's why the government won't reveal it, because the people who were partly responsible for some of the bad things that happened, and I'm not altogether clear, but, you know, I've been following UFO news for decades, and, you know, some of the things like abductions or cloning experiments or maybe underground bases and problems with them. And, you know, I think that they were promised a lot of technology, and the United States paid its part of the bargain and never got the technology. So I think there's a lot of hard feelings over that, too.
What percent of the ETs are not nice? What do you think?
The same as on Earth, just like you were talking about earlier, George.
Yeah.
Maybe more than 35% are, well, if they're here, the ones that are here are pretty about 90% unselfish and 10% selfish.
We've got David in British Columbia. There he is on the international line. Go ahead, David.
Thanks a lot, George.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, well, in my youth, I was reading Edgar Cayce, and I recall reading something about he was a prediction is saying that the Pacific Northwest would become tropical, and Edmonton would be the capital of North America. Does that ring a bell? And I just wanted to also kind of join the fray here and say I too have had a vision of a Earth shift in its rotation.
Interesting.
Well, thank you, and that's an excellent question. And the new North Pole is going to be off the eastern tip of Brazil. There are websites, and I want everybody to do this because you want to know what your climate's going to be after the change. There are websites where it's called the Great Circle, and that's for navigation between any two points on the Earth. And there are about two dozen of those sites, and only a few of them can you enter in the North Pole. But when you find one, it will tell you the distance between any two locations. So your first location is the North Pole, and that's our present North Pole, and where you live now. So I did that for where I live in Maine, and it told me that the distance was 3,100 miles. Then you do it again, and this time you enter the position of the new North Pole, which is Recife, Brazil. It's going to be just offshore of Recife, Brazil, which is the eastern tip of Brazil. That will be the new North Pole. So I do that between Maine and Recife, Brazil, and the distance is 4,200 miles. So that means that's the same as moving all of Maine down to North Carolina. And yes, it's true what Edgar Cayce said, because the equator will go straight through just offshore of Alaska, straight down the Pacific, and all of the west coast of the United States will be extremely tropical.
You're a believer, too, that people can train themselves to be more intuitive, which I've always believed.
Absolutely, absolutely. And what I wanted to tell you was, when I learned to concentrate, in part because of your aunt, that was, for me, the whole key to everything, because I was sitting there thinking, now I've eliminated all thoughts except one. What if I stay conscious and I eliminate even that last thought? And that was the breakthrough for me. And what it is imagine that your higher self is a blue sky overhead, and your lower mind is a pond in front of you. And imagine it's a windy day, and you're looking at the pond trying to see the sky. But the reflection is broken up by the wind and the chop on the water into thousands of little pieces that don't make sense. Now, when you learn to concentrate, you eliminate all the thoughts in your mind except one. And then, remaining conscious, you even eliminate that last thought. Your mind, your lower mind, your conscious mind, becomes like a pond with no wind. It becomes a perfect mirror, and it reflects your higher self, and you become one with everything that you know, because your soul is eternal. It knows everything. And so all those busy thoughts you have in your mind keep you from receiving this clear picture of what you want to know.
Very good. Well, stay with us, because we're going to come back in just a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to take some final phone calls. We've got a great week of programs for you, by the way, all set up during Thanksgiving week. On Monday, for example, I've got a major JFK program with major guests throughout, but I'll tell you a little bit more about that in a moment. Well, Ian Punnett will be filling in for me on Friday. And then, of course, full programs for you on Saturday and Sunday. George Knapp will be with us Sunday night as we begin our JFK coverage. And then on assassination anniversary night on Monday, we will have four special guests for you, all bringing in a special part of this incredible story. You will not believe some of them. And in terms of how fascinating they are. Tuesday, Linda Moulton Howe joins us, moving her up a little bit. Normally, she's on the last Thursday of every month. It's Thanksgiving. She will be on Tuesday for us. this time. And on Wednesday, we talk about what's built under the Denver airport. Get ready for that one. Thursday, Thanksgiving night, I'll be live. It'll be Who's Behind the Secret Door. And then more open lines on Friday after Thanksgiving. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. We've got some final phone calls here for you. Do you go on, Gordon, to speaking engagements or anything like that?
I just in Maine, but I would love to go anywhere that anyone would want to hear me. And but if you don't mind, I'd really like to compliment two things about this whole experience, my first time in Coast to Coast. The first is you're doing a great job of that show, Ancient Aliens. And I could talk for a year and probably only reach a few people. And that Ancient Aliens show, everywhere I go, everybody is talking about it. And I think that is the greatest thing. And I think, you know, maybe you should do a show on Planet X.
Well, you know what? I'm sure the History Channel would love to hear that. The producers of that program just did a marvelous job. So much so, as you know, Gordon, it's back for part two now. And
I know.
You know what? I'm sure it'll be 3 and 4 and 5.
Oh, it's incredible. And the thing is that it's really touching people. That it's making sense to them finally, you know?
Yeah.
It is.
That's a good point. Back to the calls. Chris is in Bellingham, Washington. There you go, Chris. Thanks for calling. Chris, you're with us?
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm calling. We're expecting snow tonight, but apparently we're going to be Mediterranean here in a couple weeks. I'm 100% disabled veteran from the Gulf War.
And thanks for serving, by the way. Thank you.
Thank you for serving, George.
You're welcome.
With multiple sclerosis, I had a near-death experience in March, a walk-in experience, which basically has brought me to now, to here. And then 2 months after that experience, I had another one. I fainted at the VA hospital getting my meds. And basically, I've been confirmed that I have Zeta guides. Also that I'm getting, everybody I talk to are like minds now. It's like just tonight I was at a bar talking to these two people that live down the street from me that I didn't know. And we're talking about, of all things, the Denver airport. And then you guys start talking about that.
Yeah.
And then I'm going through a healing right now. I was in a scooter 8 months ago, just before the near-death experience. And another thing, I was born on 111. You know that number, George.
Oh, sure do.
And my dad's a 33rd degree Mason, which I didn't know until about 5 months ago.
Well, you're getting all of this at the same time.
I know it. It's the quickening. And I was reading the Lost Symbol, and it was like I was in that book. I was the character. And it's just my life has been so synchronistic. And it's all leading up to right now and what's about to happen. And when I talk to people, like when I'm talking to you right now, it's like I'm not talking, I'm channeling. And I believe it's the Zetas, just as Gordon was talking tonight. That made sense to me because I saw a spirit, a counselor to get a spirit reading. And she said, she was talking to my guide. It's like, well, there's one there that has sunglasses. And I was thinking, and then she's like, oh, he's gone. And then I was like, are they extraterrestrial? And she's like, you know, yes, they are. Because she got goosebumps, and so did I at the same time. And I was told in 2000 that I had extraterrestrial guides in Lake Tahoe, where I took a African Civ class, and I did my final report in that class on Nibiru, and I got an A+. So everything that my life has brought me to right now, and this is just confirmation because I was on Godlike Productions earlier and said that, you know, you're doing a show on Nibiru tonight. So, of course, I got right on and hearing all the stuff about Denver, and, you know, the guy just called from BC talking about, you know, being Mediterranean. And I was told to move to Bellingham when back in 2000 from Lake Tahoe because it's going to be a safe area. And I just wanted to ask Gordon, I know that was a lot of information, guys. I'm sorry.
No, but it's really great what you has happened to you, and God bless you, really.
And he's got a question for you. Go ahead.
Thank you for being there, guys, and I'll let you guys go. Have a blessed
night. Well, ask your question.
You had a question there, Chris, too?
Oh, the question was just...
about Bellingham, Washington?
Yeah. Yeah, it's up. It's just south of Surrey, B.C.
Yeah, well, the one problem is once the whole west coast of North America is lined up east to west, we're still going to have that general weather direction from the west to the east. And B.C. is going to have a lot of volcanic action. So your main problem is going to be volcanic ash falling on you that has heavy metals in it, cadmium, zinc, lead, arsenic. And what you're going to have to do above all else is filter your water. So
yeah,
that's
critical. Yeah.
That should be your first thought.
All right, Chris. Thanks. And again, thanks for serving. Let's go next to Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love. Hey, Phil, go ahead.
Good morning, George, and good morning, Gordon.
Good morning.
The gentleman that just was on with MS, et cetera, he should search out and locate the Rife frequency generator, R-I-F-E. It will reverse and heal his MS and everything else. That's unselfish offering for him. My question to Gordon is that if North Carolina is a safe place, away from the coast or in the middle of the state?
No, away from the coast.
So
but you have another problem in North Carolina. You have some very wealthy people that have built some things in the mountains there, and they're going to try and expect that you're going to treat them like kings of the earth because they were rich. And Nancy has said over and over that one of the hardest places to be in a survival community, it will be North Carolina because of the selfishness and the firepower of those people. So I would say if you could avoid them, you'll be doing well.
And my additional question is, since I am from the area of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, that is probably not a safe haven to be.
No, but amazingly, most of Pennsylvania actually is a safe area, but definitely not near the coast, not Philadelphia. And New Jersey is going under from one end to the other.
So the whole East Coast of the United States is going to be similar to the West Coast.
Well, I don't know what you mean by similar, because the West Coast
underwater.
What?
Underwater.
No, the West Coast is not going to be underwater. What's going to happen is the water is going to go through the mountain passes and fill the valleys behind. But there's actually Utah, you know, where the salt flats are. Those are very stable areas. They've survived every single pole shift. That's one of the hardest parts of the North American plate, and that's not going to fracture, uplift, crack, flood, you could actually survive. A good place would be out in the middle of a salt flat. Of course, your problem would be water, but I mean, just for the pole shift itself, that would be a place you could survive.
All right, Grand Chute, Wisconsin. We've got Scott east of the Rockies. Scott, go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Norrie, for taking my call.
Of course.
This is the second call. I called you about for a first time caller about 3 months ago about the polar shift in the Earth, and I had asked at that time if the sun was about that. But for Gordon, thank you again for taking my call. I'm wondering, in the biblical scripture of the New Testament, they talk about people that will not taste of death until the second coming. I'm wondering if these are Zetas or whatever, and I'll take your answer offline. Thank you, Mr. Norrie.
All right.
Well, that's an interesting question. You know, when you make a prophecy 2,000 years in the past and then you move forward, things don't always happen exactly the way. But, for instance, where it says there were two in the field and one was taken, and there were two in the kitchen and one was taken, what that is referring to is those who are so unselfish and so caring and so empathetic that they've already learned this spiritual lesson. They not only made the orientation choice to be service to other, but they've lived it. And those people are going to be welcomed instantly into the extraterrestrial communities that will come out once all governments fail.
All right, let's go to Robin in Kansas City, Missouri. Go ahead, Robin. Thanks for calling.
Hi, my name is Robin, and I was just wondering what will happen to our animals, our domestic animals, our pets, and such as the animals we eat and our wildlife is one question. And the other one is I wanted to know if Kansas City, Missouri is going to be a safe place or not.
Well, very good questions. The first one concerns me greatly because I love pets. I just love them. And I don't have a clear answer on that. I think that, you know, if the animal is capable of feeding itself, then there's a good chance that it would survive and you could keep it. You're going to have a problem from other people who look at it as food. And I'm not, you know, I'm just trying to be direct here and tell you that, you know, if you've got a large animal and it's wandering around the pasture and they're starving and they have a gun, there's a chance it's going to get shot and eaten. So that's not a pretty picture. But if your animal is capable of feeding itself, then I believe, and if you're far enough away from those kinds of people and you're with the right kind of community where you can have like a safe area, then I believe that you will be able to continue having animals, pets and farm animals. But if you're in a city or your animal requires special food that you have to purchase, then I really don't see much future for it, and I'm very sorry for that. And as for Kansas City, Missouri, the Mississippi, you know, George, I got to say, George, you really get this whole thing really well. I've listened to you on many other shows, and I think you understand this as well as anybody can. And I'm probably not telling you anything tonight that you didn't already know. But the United States, the whole from the west of the Mississippi is going to be like still, you know, North America, but to the east, there's going to be this huge gap because the St. Lawrence Seaway is going to get wider and salt water is going to go into the Great Lakes. Then it's going to go down the Mississippi Valley into Ohio, and it's going to go into the Gulf of Mexico. And five plates meet in the Gulf of Mexico, and that's why Central America and all the Caribbean islands are basically going to disappear. So Kansas City, Missouri, you have to look in the – Nancy has done an unbelievable job of listing every state, every country, most cities, most river valleys, and discussing each area in particular. I personally don't remember what she said about Kansas City, Missouri, but there is going to be the Mississippi going through there, and it's going to be – at that point, it might even be between 100 and 200 miles wide, and I'm not that familiar with Missouri to be able to tell you that particular spot, but anyone can go to Zeta Talk and look up their area and see what it says.
All right, couple more callers we go. Kevin's in Sheridan, Wyoming, and you're up with us. Go ahead, Kevin.
Hi, George. How are you doing tonight?
Okay, thank you.
I got a question for you, George, and I also got a question for Gordon.
All right.
George, my main question for you tonight, sir, is what are the chances for a roundtable topic or roundtable on this topic in the near future?
Probably not directly after the show, but I'm sure we can do it down the line.
Okay. Gordon, I've been studying about planet Nibiru, the whole 2012
phenomenon. Yeah, Nibiru, yeah.
For quite some time, about 8 months now.
Mm-hmm.
If there is a pole shift, when it does occur, what is your best explanation about Yellowstone National Park?
Ooh, good.
That's a good question. That's everybody knows that in the past that was a supervolcano that had a huge eruption. So that is a very, very popular and frequent question: is what is to become of Yellowstone?
Nancy says that it definitely will not be a super volcano. It will not explode. And that instead, all the lands, there will be some eruptions and some earthquakes, but nothing like has been painted on some of the shows that show it could be one of the largest, you know, as big as Krakatoa or something. It's not going to happen. So the land to the north in Wyoming is all a safe area, and go have fun.
All right. Let's get, one more. San Francisco we go. Kurt, let's squeeze you in here. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks. Thanks a lot. There's about a year or two ago, there was supposed to be an asteroid show and a comet all in one night. And I took the camcorder out and set it up with a tripod, and I was filming out the night trying to catch some asteroids. And we were out there all night. We never saw the comet. Right before sunrise, something did come up out of the sky. I got it all on video. And as soon as the sun peaked, it disappeared, and it was about the size of the moon. And it wasn't the moon, because I had the moon already on the camcorder earlier that night. It was what I saw what could have been Planet S, because I got to be honest with you, I actually sent I sent an email to Linda House seeing if she wanted to investigate it. She never replied back. I've got videotape of what could be Planet X.
What could it be, Gordon?
I don't know.
Well, Planet X is near the sun, so if you were doing this at night in the dark, it definitely was not Planet X.
Yeah,
but
it was not that.
There is a dark planet. It's called the Dark Twin. Normally, it orbits on the other side of the sun, so we never see it. But all the astronauts that go up into space see it, and they're not allowed to talk about it. And I know a lot of top astronomers and people like that, and I don't even bother asking them anymore, because I just know they cannot tell me. They would be risking everything if they mentioned these things. So there have been two pictures that I know of taken of the Dark Twin, and it was near the moon at one point, and somebody got a digital camera, just happened to record it. But the tail of Planet X, when it first came in 2003, the tail launched all these rocks, and you are seeing unbelievable meteor showers. Almost every night you can go out and see something spectacular, and that is the proof of Planet X, because it's not the meteor showers, it's rocks from Planet X.
Indeed is. Hey, thanks, Gordon. You very delightful chat with you tonight. Gordon James Giannini Nutto, and first-time guest, and he did a great great job. For Dan Galanti, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasore, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Nappy and Punnett and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.